Mickey Hart here. You're listening to GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. The usual lads here on a Thursday, Stevie and Conan. And there's only one place to start, lads, and that's the CPA, because they had a presser on Tuesday, wasn't it? I didn't get a chance to go along. I really wanted to go along, but I was too busy. But basically, they've outlined what their proposals... they have three proposals, potential proposals that they want to potentially bring in that will solve all this fixture chaos. And I think they wanted to go public with their proposals and with what their aims, because they're not being taken seriously by Croke Park. They've met with Croke Park and they're just being brushed aside. So basically, Croke Park are not entertaining them. So their only option then was to go public with what they want to do, which looks like perfect sense to me, an awful lot of it. So basically, the big talking points coming out of what they released was that they're ring-fencing April as an exclusive club month only. And they want December as a closed season, and they want to complete the club competitions in a calendar year. Now, that all sounds grand. One thing I would worry about there: December closed season, brilliant. Completing club championships in the calendar year, brilliant. The thing about April as a club exclusive month only, I would hope that is to go back and play a league game or two with the club. I wouldn't like for some counties to play their championship then, because there could be, like Dublin, when they play theirs in April, like there could be some clubs out in April then. So my idea with this, if we're shortening the intercounty season, all the three CPA proposals propose to end the intercounty season at the end of July. So you have August and September to run off your club championships, which sounds absolutely perfectly reasonable to me. So if club players know they're starting in August in their club and get a good run at it, they can actually train to peak for August. This idea of playing a couple of games in April and then going back to doing nothing and then pre-season, you're basically doing two pre-seasons in the same year. So for that April only, I like it. So that club players go back and get out of this intercounty bubble and go back, you know what I mean, and train with their clubs and show their faces around their clubs. I wouldn't like to see there being intercounty championship games in that month.
Yeah, championship games that early in the season certainly doesn't make any sense at all. And, you know, I would have loved to have seen the CPA come out and say, listen, for August, all championships across the board in all counties to commence in August, you know, which...
On the same date.
Possibly on the same date.
I think on the
well,
same date.
I don't think you'd be able to get them on the same date with inter-county teams still involved in championships. But
they want the inter-county season ended at the end of July.
Well, I don't think we'll ever see that. You know, it's probably too soon in the season. I would still love to see more intercounty games being played in the good summer months. But I think being realistic about the whole thing, you know, I think August is the ideal opportunity for club championships to commence, barring the counties who are still involved in intercounty championships. But, you know, for a club team to have a championship game in April and then maybe wait 20 weeks, which has been the case in the past for their second round games or for their next game, you know, is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I was talking to Declan Brennan this morning and he was outlining, you know, some of the why they went public, and they've said this in the press conference anyway, and Aaron Kernan spoke really well. The calendar year is a no-brainer, Conan. Like, I mean, Jesus, I noticed from personal experience that 3 month wait or that 10 week wait from winning a club provincial to an All-Ireland semi-final, Christ almighty, like, what on earth? And then you have the county players from that club not being prevented and discriminated against with their county team because they've happened to be successful at their club. And it's like the GAA's own fixture schedule is discriminating against their own players to play inter-county. Like, the logic of it is just bizarre. So, like, I think there'll be a huge amount of support for finishing the club season in the 1 year.
Aaron Kernan's stats were brilliant as well. The correlation between Cross McGlen doing well and then Armagh struggling in the league was frightening. Like, how sort of similar it was and how much of a pattern appeared. It's common sense. Like, it should be done in a calendar year. It can be done in a calendar year. Right now, we're trying to make a 16-month season fit into every year. That's what's happening. Like, it's going from January right through to March, sometimes like even longer. So it's not possible. It's not needed. There's too many waffly competitions that we don't need. We don't need to get into that. But my only concern is that this seems like a bit of hot air, like, because it's not official. It's great that they go public and it gets a bit of traction, but they still need to go through the right channels and Congress and all that.
Yeah, there's a special Congress, right, in September this year. So they have an opportunity, and I suppose this is why they have gone public. There's a special Congress, which I think it's on to get through the hurling proposals, the new restructure to the hurling, which will be next year, the round robins and stuff. So there is a special Congress. So it's not for no reason. Like, I mean, this is why they're trying to get it through. My advice to Declan Brennan when I talked to him this morning is, you need to go to county board meetings. Number one, county boards, like Pádraig Duffy has gone around on the campaign trail to county boards. He got his super eights through. How did he get his super eights through? He promised county boards more money. Like, I mean, this is very, very like simplistic. Like, county boards are not objective when they go voting at Congress. They care about how their lives are going to be made easier. They vote, like, for example, I've said this on the podcast loads of times, every county in Leinster voted against Dublin playing a quarter final outside Croke Park, like 3 years ago. Every county except for Laois. Now, does that tell you where Congress or where county board delegates' heads are at? They cared more about revenue coming from those games in Croke Park than their own county's success in the field. So why on earth, like, are we going to wait in Congress for these people to make changes? Right. What the CPA need to do, they've got so many different reps. They've got Chrissy McCaig that are respected, Derek McGrath, Aaron Kernan, Anthony Miles, all these fellas, and loads of lads, Liam Griffin on the hurling side. Send these lads around to county board meetings. County delegates can be dictated to by the clubs. The clubs can dictate this, but if they go around and actually get on the campaign trail, get into these county board meetings, get the support of clubs, they can dictate what way the county... It is not a county board decision. This is a decision that can be dictated by the grassroots that the club players association represent. If they get into all these county board meetings, make their pitch, explain exactly why they're doing it, and in actual fact, it's funny, they're expecting from their proposals greater revenue for the GEA. Sell this at county board meetings, take a vote on it, and have the club delegates decide where the county board delegate goes and votes for this at Congress. Like, that seems like their starting point. Now, whether they're out of time to do that in September, like, it's maybe a bit soon to get around another Laois county board meeting in July. Laois only have 8 per year, and the one in July is done, so I don't even know if they're sitting in August. So, like, I mean, maybe they're going to miss the boat for this Congress to do that. But it seems like a no-brainer to get the hell around there and start influencing people on the ground and in these meetings.
It does, but, you know, we have to be realistic here as well. The likes of Aaron Kernan, who's still playing football, Chrissy McCaig, who's still playing football, is it unrealistic to expect those guys to go visiting numerous county boards? I think we have to maybe look more towards the past players who probably have a wee bit more time on their hands.
Yeah, but the principle of get it on the agenda for the county board meetings, get it trashed out, and actually have the clubs have a say in this, you know, because clubs dictate the county board.
The principle is right, and, you know, when it comes to county boards, you know, sometimes you expect a common sense approach, but we don't always get that with county boards. So, you know, you've got to really go in. You've got to send the right people in to hit the message home.
You do.
Hard.
And they have good lads. Like, I mean, they have good lads, the CPA, respected fellas, you know.
And they have to hit the message home hard with the club delegates who are there to make them realise, you know, the consequences and also the you know, the financial reward out of it, if there is a financial reward out of it for certain clubs and counties.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I mean, it takes the power away from county board or county managers, gives county board a bit more control. Like, it makes so much bloody sense. And, like, as far as I'm concerned, and I agree with Micheál Briody when he said that Croke Park don't seem to have a strategy. You know, what's their strategy going forward? They seem to have little incremental changes every year, but there's no actual, they're not working towards anything. Now, Fergal McGill denied that and said they are working, you know, towards a strategic plan. I would love to know where the GAA sees the championship structure in 3 years' time. I personally agree with Micheál Briody. I don't think they have one. I think the GAA are putting fires out every year instead of going, hang on, let's prevent all these fires by sorting the whole thing out this year, and we won't have to firefight every year then.
Well, if there is a strategic plan Certainly they should be able to make it public. You know,
CPA have called on now. They've called on the GAA to make that public, and it'll be interesting to see where they go. But lads, we want to leave that there because we've a couple of things to get through before we get into the huge games at the weekend. Peter Creedon stood down, lads, as Laois manager, and he stood down obviously with dignity. He's not like trying to hang on. He probably saw the writing on the wall coming from the last Laois County Board meeting where he wasn't getting much support at all from the clubs. There you are again. Not a county board's decision, lads. Clubs. Club delegates. Like, clubs will vote the manager in or out, and that's the reality of it. So this is county board's decisions. The clubs can actually dictate this if they stand up. He said he addressed the drinking issue, and this was something we talked about in the podcast, how this one delegate from Credit Yard can actually, you know, get national headlines based on allegations that nobody knows are founded or not. So Peter Creedon says the type of generalisation of being a drink culture in the squad is deeply unfair and divisive, given that we're aware of only one incident where three players were absent from an early training session on an Easter Monday. So this is an Easter Monday, like, you know, back in, when's Easter? April. You know what I mean? And three lads. This kind of thing goes on in squads absolutely all over the country. Like, lads step out of line. Stevie, you even did with Armagh when, like, the image there was that you were, you know, you can still be committed and make a bloody mistake. But this was the picture painted. And again, my county is making headlines for drinking culture and stuff like that. And, like, I mean, if you're a manager looking in from the outside, you'd be thinking, geez, I'm not going in near them. Like, I think Laois are a committed bunch, but I don't think those kind of headlines from a bloody club delegate, I don't think they help anything. And Creedon says they're unfounded. He actually said the management was not aware of any issues regarding the drink culture. And in recent discussions with players, we found they were at a loss to explain or substantiate such rumours. Like, isn't that terrible that this all was put out there? And
you know what blows my mind here is you know, the yardage that can come out of something that's said at a county board meeting. You know, I was reading this week a Westmeath delegate criticising the Armagh support that was down in Mullingar few weeks ago, and lambasting them, saying that they were all heavily intoxicated
inebriated.
That's absolutely,
it didn't mean a very drunk
that
Armagh
is absolute bullshit. So it is. I was at the match, I was working at the match, I had no drink taken at the match, you know.
Don't think he was talking about you.
No, but
certain pundits
what happened was Armagh certainly outnumbered the Westmead support, and they were vocal. They were encouraging their team to win the game.
They were pissed off their faces, Stevie, come on.
They're encouraging their team to win the game. And an incident occurred where a Westmead sub threw a bottle at an Armagh support, or into an Armagh support of the ground. And Garda guys had to come in and sort the mess out. I don't know what happened there, but it was only a minority. You know, he basically lambasted every Armagh supporter that went, which is ridiculous. Going back to Peter Creedon, I think his job was made untenable, you know, coming out of the comments that were made, which is absolutely ridiculous.
It was. Right, lads, something a little bit more lighthearted here is the Dublin flag. Flag. Is that what they're called?
Flag.
That's what it's called.
We've had this conversation in the north of Ireland once or twice.
You're well used to flag conversations here, lads. So GAA Director of Communications Alan Milton says the ban on the large Dublin flag from Hill 16 isn't an effort to antagonise Dublin fans. So Alan Milton's coming out explaining this. Now, this all seems very, very silly to me. So the big, huge Dublin flag on Hill 16, which I think looks bloody brilliant, really, you know, they unroll it before the game, then put it away. It's not up for that long. And it looks great on a terrace. Any terrace, we see it in soccer grounds all over the world. Mayo even have one, I think, if they took the hill, if they weren't playing Dublin. Like, I mean, it looks good. It's no harm. But the Dublin Fire Brigade have advised that it could potentially be a fire hazard. Now, the Dublin County Board or the Dublin Fire Brigade did not tell Croke Park to ban the flag. They just said it's a potential fire hazard. Croke Park have taken the decision to ban the flag. I think it's way over the top here, lads. I really do. I think it's bloody Christ. I mean, it's the world has gone mad if you can't unroll a flag. So, like, I mean, maybe someone could set a cigarette lighter to it. But, like, I mean, that's never happened before. If you wanted to be like that, you could set fire to a fella in front of you. Set fire to their
You're
jacket.
A fire hazard.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, where do you stop on this? What's not a fire hazard if... you know, if you want to draw a line on things being fire hazards.
I think it's fantastic to see as well in terms of the flag being rolled out. And it's great, you know, from a neutral point of view to see the Dublin colours and the hill they got there, and even the Mayo colours when they are taking the hill over. I can probably, to an extent, understand where the GAA are coming from. Obviously, the incident and the building, the tower over in London that happened, and they have to be extra cautious. Maybe that's why they're taking this cautious approach at the minute. But, you know, it's never happened before, and somebody can take out a letter at any stage and put the letter to the flag. But, let's be realistic. Have you ever seen anything like that going on in a GAA ground? And I wouldn't expect that something like that would happen.
But have you ever seen it happen in any football ground in the world? Like a big flag. Like that's, I don't know, it's just not something you'd imagine.
It only takes one time. I understand that. And you look
where
at some of
care,
the...
Where does being careful stop then?
Yeah, you look at some of the hot-tempered games that take place in South America, for instance, where flags are out and flares are out and, you know...
Fires,
exactly. And there's never an incident like this. So, you know, maybe the GAA are being extra cautious in this regard, but certainly, you know... From a neutral point of view, it's great to watch and see the scale and the size of that flag being rolled around the hill.
I think the Dublin protest, though, the one they're planning, like all the fans are getting together and they're saying they're going to do a boycott of all the retail industries in Croke Park. No chippers, no drink, no shops or anything. Like, I think that'll hit Croke Park hard, and maybe it will soften their cough a little bit and just maybe just row back on having a flag out.
I think it might as well. Like, I mean, that's it. Like, I mean, the different Dublin supporters clubs released a statement, and they were complaining, saying unnecessary searches even before the new safety rules came in, caps being taken off mineral bottles, flags banned, and huge perspex screen are just some of the unnecessary safety measures we have to contend with. They're saying, why is the whole stadium not covered by a perspex glass? But I suppose the whole stadium doesn't spill in onto the field like Hill 16 maybe does. That was for safety reasons. I've played in Croke Park in a Leinster final. Dublin beat us, and I was playing finished game at full forward, and like, I mean, they started peeling in off Hill 16 and running past me, and I got one or two, didn't get any punches or anything, but I got one or two, some verbal
abuse.
Find
that hard to believe.
But I genuinely was thinking, Jesus shit here. Like, I mean, I could be in serious trouble here if some fella just wanted to give me a dig on the way past. But like, I kind of agreed with that perspex screen. I think players should be protected, and you know, from fans running in onto the pitch. And I think the Hill 16 was kind of known for emptying onto the field after games.
But the insult is that they didn't give you a punch on the way past.
You know what, I don't want to give false accusation, but I'm trying to think back, did I get something? Because I ended up running off the field, like I just got the hell out of there.
Fear of your life.
But Croke Park is very strict on a whole lot of things. Like, I mean, when I worked for News Talk, I was sideline reporter, and towards the end of my time as sideline reporter, they actually banned me doing my post-match interviews out on the field, which I couldn't believe. I was like, what is going on here? I had to do my post-match interviews down the stairs underneath the dressing rooms. And I was trying to say, like, I mean, sure, the whole idea of a post-match interview by a sideline reporter is that I'm on the pitch and you can hear the atmosphere of the crowd. And I went, what is the point of this? Oh, and they'll give you kind of health and safety reasons, something. It's just like the illogical kind of decisions that are made.
You'll be thankful on Saturday to get away from those Armagh fans, those drunk ones. Get on underneath, you'll be safe.
Unruly. Well, I thought, yeah,
That's coming from a sour Dublin Derry fan, isn't it?
Right, lads, we'll leave it there and we will be back. Oh, one thing before we go. Ticket prices, if you want a little bit of news. Stand and terrace ticket prices for the All-Ireland quarterfinals and as well as both football and hurling semi-finals have been increased by a fiver, so you'll have to pay 35 for a stand ticket and 25 for the hill. So there's some more revenue for the GAA.
That's to make up for the boycott.
That's to make up for the Dubs fans not buying any merchandise behind Hill 16. Right, we'll be back and we'll talk about the matches. Dear, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and play for myself and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatchet inside either. He's unfortunately for you, Willie, it won't last forever. And you can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Willie.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
AIB, back in club and county.
Obviously four great games in store in Croke Park at the weekend. There's two on Saturday, two on Sunday. We're going to focus on the two on Sunday because they're all around quarterfinals. We'll have a look at the other two in prediction slot. But for this slot, we're going to start with Kerry and Galway, which, lads, on paper here and from the evidence we've seen so far this year, this is going to be a really high-scoring, classic game with a lot of traditional football in it, a lot of kick passing, and two teams that like to move the ball fast, two teams that have excellent forward lines, two teams that could potentially leave themselves a little bit vulnerable at the back. And you couldn't say anything outside of this could potentially be a really good game.
Yeah, well, we hope so, you know, and listen, this time last week we were sitting back saying that Galway would be out of the championship at this stage.
I wasn't. Okay, Do not put me in on that.
Myself and Colin were. We didn't see any way of Galway getting past Donegal, but how they brushed Donegal aside, you know, has to be, it was seriously impressive. And you know, it was great to see, because you know, we have been fans of Galway and we have spoke quite a lot about them this year. And you know, you have to say that maybe the Connacht final defeat was a blessing in disguise for them, because it gave them an opportunity to, you know, re-energise themselves. They had 2 weeks off. They didn't have that same opportunity that we spoke about last week, the previous year when Tipperary beat them. So, you know, they've got back playing good football again. They put up a massive score last week, and you know, if they go in with the same confidence that they went into Markovich Park last week, then certainly, you know, the ingredients are there for a shootout between themselves and Kerry.
Surely, if it's a shootout, though, I mean, it will be a poor enough game, because you have to assume Kerry will walk it by about 10 points if it becomes a shootout, and Kerry forward line's allowed to run around free.
That's what, obviously, the Kerry full forward line versus the Galway full back line is a massacre waiting to happen. Now, I think Galway can get a lot of joy in their forward line because they have an excellent forward line, but they definitely need to protect their full back line a little bit more, because they are suspect. Imagine Cian on Donaghy. Sure, he's no size. He might need to make some sort of a change there and play a bigger man at full back.
Yeah, and that could be the case, you know, but this is a game where Galway certainly have to, with the space of Croke Park and the full forward line as dangerous as Kerry's, they have to adopt the sweeper. They have to. But at the other end of the pitch, you spoke about Galway's attack. It's brilliant to see Sean Armstrong coming back in last week and being so effective in the Galway attack and really leading the charge as such. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the likes of Geaney express himself in Croke Park, Armstrong express himself, players of that quality, you know, that really can light Croke Park up and show us what they're really, really made of. And but I would be wary of you know, the Galway full back line, like, up against undoubtedly one of the best full forward lines in the country.
Yeah, would you go with Liam Silk potentially back on Donaghy, you know, because all their full back line, Sweeney, Kine and Kerrin, they're all small. Maybe put Silk on Donaghy, and then you could bring back Johnny Heaney as an attacking wing back. I know Heaney did so well at wing forward the last day, but like, I mean, Kevin Walsh has got a lot of decisions to make, because as it stands, that full back line is going to get torn apart by the Kerry full forward line. There's actually no doubt about that. If Kevin Walsh goes out with that full back line and no sweeper in front of it, which they haven't been playing full time sweepers, they're going to be in trouble.
The thing with Donaghy, like, he didn't get many high balls against Cork. He was just winning so much out in front. His movement was great. He became just this sort of link man that was winning ball in his chest and popping it off. So putting a big man back might not just be the big solution as well, like, or the best solution. I can't see, like, surely Kevin Walsh will be thinking, not even one sweeper, we need, or two midfielders coming straight back to the 45 and maybe two half forwards coming back. And I know.
Well, they can play that game. Like, I mean, Galway play, they both have very similar game plans, right? They'll play with four forwards up. You know what I mean? They'll have working half forwards. If you're slow with your attack, Galway and Kerry will both be back with 12 behind the ball, right? If you're fast with your attack, you can get one-on-ones on the Kerry full back line, and you can get one-on-ones on the Galway full back line. That's very obvious. But very interesting stat here, because Stephen O'Mara writes great pieces on Sports Joe website, and it's all about this. And I've thought about this before, lads, right? And that is, in training, if you're playing, if you know you're playing against Kerry or you're playing against Galway, in Kerry, in training, I'd have a shot clock brought in. I would say when that ball's turned over, I want to see a shot off within 10 seconds. Yeah. That ball has to move, because if we don't move it, they're going to get back. And then we're in a situation where we're having to bloody pass around and refilter it and all that nonsense. So turnover, counter-attack, 10 seconds, lads. And if it's not kicked dead by 10 seconds, you know what I mean? You're practicing all this in training. Because Stephen did some analysis on this, right? So after 17 minutes, Donegal were a point up. So he analysed what happened in the next 24 minutes when Galway just took over, and he looked at kickouts, he looked at a couple of different things. But he says, in this 24 minute period, we looked at how quickly the respective sides took the ball forward after gaining possession. We've taken a marker of when possession was gained to advancing 50 metres. So it's getting 50 metres up the field, whether it be for your full back line, getting over the halfway line, you know, or if it's the half back line, actually getting a shot off. Donegal average took 16 and a half seconds. Galway's average took 10 and a half seconds. Yeah. So that's just an indication. Galway are moving that ball fast through the foot to catch out the Donegal lads who are pushing up, you know, and filtering back. It's all about moving that ball fast. And the teams like Galway, we saw Down do it against Monaghan, Kerry do it to brilliant effect. You'll get your one-on-ones if you get that ball down that field ASAP. You won't do that without a presence in the half forward line and leaving enough forwards up there to be able to do that.
And the key to that is, you know, the forwards who are playing, you know, minus, you know, extra forwards up with them, they have to be disciplined and patient and hold the shape and keep the shape. And then when the ball is overturned, that they are an outlet, you know. But a ball kicked can move faster than any man can run. So, you know, it is certainly the way forward. And teams who do it effectively look really impressive attacking, so they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, not too many teams can carry it out, you know, to the standard that Dublin do, Kerry do, that Galway done last week, you know. And I would even say down in the game against Monaghan, not too many teams carry it out that effectively. But when it is carried out like that, there, it looks as if these teams are world beaters, and it's a fantastic way of playing. But certainly, I don't believe a lot of players realise how fast the ball actually moves when it's kicked.
Yeah, but you won't, like we've said this in the podcast loads of times, and loads of teams are copping on to this, is that you will no chance of doing this without a couple of men on your half forward line. No chance. You'll have to work, if you've no half forward line, you're going through the hands. You're going through the hands. The other lads are filtering back just as fast as you're building it up. You know what I mean? So you're really shooting yourself in the foot here. But Kerry and Galway are two teams that really can master that art of getting that ball up the other end of the field through kick passes and cutting out these retreating players.
And in fairness to Galway, like we've talked about it, like, but the Roscommon game aside, they have been very good throughout the league. Even last year, the kick passing game was brilliant and they were getting the most out of their men inside. Like, so I do think they're going to have chances, and they'll have plenty. Like, if they get enough goals, they're going to be right in this game. Like, I think they'll need to, at least. But I think they're going to get enough chance to get a carry. I'm just worried about the all-around. Like, I think Kevin Walsh will try to sew it up, and it will make it tighter than what I'm saying it will be. But it's just how tight can they sew it up is the question.
And the one sweeper obviously trying to cover three in there isn't bloody easy.
Donoghue's back on fire. Ganey's the best full forward in the country at the minute. And you know, Kieran Donoghue has a renewed lease of life. You know, so planting one sweeper in there certainly isn't going to be enough. And the actual fact is, you know, because of how good those guys are in the inside line, they are going to cause damage, regardless, you know, of how well marked they are. They're going to cause a certain amount of damage.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. A knock-on effect, lads, of moving this ball so fast, right? And Stephen has done more stats on this. Is Galway took on and beat Donegal, man, 10 times. What in a one-on-one? Forward, Sean Armstrong, see him taking on his man over on the underneath the stand and coming in, and they got one of the goals off it. You never see that against Donegal. But Galway were moving that ball so fast, they were able to create one-on-one situations. And that's a knock-on effect of getting that ball down there and beating these retreating players and playing clever diagonal balls. Suddenly then your forwards are going, right, geez, this is brilliant. But, like I said, you've got your 10 seconds.
Yeah.
It has to be done in 10 seconds or less, or else you have the Frank McGlynns and you have the Owen McHughes and all these lads retreating back. And when they get into that defensive structure that they love, there's no one-on-ones then, buddy. Do you know? But, like, I mean, that's the knock-on effect of these huge, massive, fast transitions. And in training, the manager going, turnover, shot clock. Next, yeah. Minute goes past 8, 9, 10, blow it up, hand over the ball. Yeah. No, I'm done with you. You're going nowhere with this. You know, this kind of, get it into their heads to move that thing fast.
What I would say is that this is a different Donegal team and they're smaller, they're younger, they're still a bit more underdeveloped. I mean, I remember doing, like, looking at Donegal against Antrim and talking about how much they take men on and thinking these boys are perfectly designed to get at Tyrone because they take their men on. They got to Tyrone, it was a different ball game. They couldn't take them on, and then they wouldn't after a while because they were afraid of losing the ball. So it's all well and good doing that against Donegal. It's a good tactic targeting Donegal for that. But now you're coming out against Moran and Walsh and Crowley and Morley and these boys, it's a different ball game trying to get past
them. Yeah, one-on-ones is another skill that's almost lost in our game, you know, because of the blanket defences and the way teams set themselves up nowadays. So, you know, it was fantastic to see forwards being able to you know, decide, right, I'm going to go by my man. But it's something that's probably lost in a forwards game nowadays as well, because a lot of the time they are winning the ball and shipping it out, winning the ball, shipping it out, instead of winning the ball. Right, I'm going to make my defender think about how he's going to mark me. I'm going to ship it out once. Next time I'm going to take him on. I'm going to take him down his blind side. You know, next time I'm going to maybe try a crossfield pass. But it's very difficult for a forward nowadays to do that.
It's very difficult. And that's one of the great sights that we miss in Gaelic football a bit now, because, like, it's different in soccer. It's obviously a very defensive game, but you can skip past two fellas in soccer. In GA, you can't, because it can just kind of grab you and halt your momentum and their upper body strength. That if you're doubled up on in GA, you're an idiot if you're going to try and keep going on through them. Like, that's what stupid players do. So we might have lost that little one-on-one, man-on-man, I'm getting it out in front of you, throwing you a sidestep and I'm gone. We don't see that enough. We see it, hopefully we'll start seeing it a bit more now that teams, number one, the trend this year is pushing up on kickouts, which is a huge, huge welcome to the game. We're seeing kickouts going to midfield, which is a huge, huge welcome to the game. We're going back to more traditional style. Tyrone, Donegal obviously aren't. Most teams are going back to that more traditional style where they're attacking with the ball and defending without the ball. And there is an opportunity when they're all pushed up that if you go along to midfield and move the ball really fast, you'll get the one-on-ones. When you turn it over, you move it through the foot and get it down there, you might get one-on-ones. So it potentially is turning around.
Slowly but surely. I don't think we...
Not for every county. Like, Tyrone won't go there. And there's nothing wrong, but we've a contrast.
We'll never be able to eradicate the sweeper in the game now.
No.
You know,
but I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I don't believe there's anything wrong with that.
Is it eradicated a little? Because I'm thinking one sweeper is pointless now, especially when you've got three good full forwards. Does that sort of eradicate it a bit? I'm thinking, what a waste just having one man in there.
Against Kerry, when they're equally good. But, like, I mean, against Monaghan, one is enough because you cover McManus. Yeah. You know, it depends.
Yeah, it all depends on the quality of forward line that you're coming up against. I did say there that one sweeper against the Kerry full forward line is almost a waste of time. You're more or less better off, you know, leaving the whole area isolated and open for them to run on and play the way they want to play. But against certain teams, you know, with less ability in the forward line, you can get away with one sweeper.
Yeah, so the midfield battle, lads, we'll talk about before we move on to their game, is going to be great. You'll have David Moran, who's a banker, obviously, to start. And we're not sure, will it be Anthony Maher or will it be Jack Barry? I thought Jack Barry was harsh done by to not start against Cork, the Munster final. I think he's a really good player. And then, obviously, last week, Paul Conroy and Tomás Flynn did so well at midfield. So that's a really good battle. You'd fancy Kerry potentially to shade it. But we'll see a lot of fetching in that area. And my God, like we talked about Galway, the improvement in their midfield the last day was unbelievable. So here's some more stats from Stephen O'Mara. In their 24 minute dominance again that he went to after it was a contest when Galway blew Donegal away, they didn't try to hit the full back line once on a kick out. No surprise there, right? They tried to stay away from it after last day. They went wide to the half back line twice and went long and hard five times. Right, from their five long kicks, they won four and lost one, and they scored two goals and 1 point from these long kickouts. It's an incredible when you see it actually broken down in front of you. There's our five kickouts. We're cutting out most of the Donegal defence, which is pushed up on our kickout. We're going long. We talked about this in the podcast, lads. Go bloody long. Get it down there. When you have a good midfield, they scored two goals and a point from those long five kickouts. Damien Comer, interestingly, lads, his switch to the middle was key. He won or knocked down the ball for a teammate on all four. It's not mad.
I don't like that. I want to see Comer
inside. You prefer
inside.
Him in there, but yeah. they left last week. They left Burke and they left Armstrong in there, and they were lively in there as well. I really have time for Kevin Walsh the way I love Comer in there as well. But when you see that, like he has a big influence no matter where he's playing Comer.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, would you believe? Sure, he was on the show earlier on this year. Comer, when Galway won an under-21 All-Ireland, played as a working wing forward. Like, now he said he's not built for that anymore.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's not a stranger out around that kind of area, you know.
Well, he's got the size to go out there, you know, and he can certainly, you know, get something to every kick out that's going towards him. It'll be interesting to see what Kevin Walsh opts for in his midfield pairing this weekend, because certainly, you know, we criticised the Galway midfield here heavily last week, but they really, you know, put pay in our face in terms of how they performed last weekend. And you have to admire players who are able to, you know, take criticism on the chin and go out and put in a solid performance the following day out. Can they put it back to back? They're going to have to against this Kerry midfield, because they've got, for me, the best midfielder in the country at the minute, in David Moran. He's a fantastic athlete. He's a great fetcher of the ball. He's brilliant at driving forward. He's brilliant at kicking scores. So they're going to have to be on their toes if they're going to curtail the threat of David Moran coming from midfield.
Yeah, I think that's, there's no doubt about it. Paul Conroy will probably pick him up. Like, they're both leaders on their team. And Paul Conroy really needs to, like, tear into Moran. There's no doubt about that.
I think this is where I think Jack Barry will play, because I think they'll be trying to take these boys on a run, like, and to see what they're made of, you know, going back and, like, really just coping with a mobile midfielder.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you know, he probably will have to, because Tomás Flynn is so fast and so mobile that Anthony Maher might struggle with him on the ground. So you can imagine Jack Barry will play. That would be a great battle. Paul Conroy and Tomás Flynn against Jack Barry and David Moran.
Yeah, I mean, we are, like, you're right in a way. We're set up for a great game, because the middle third is going to be class, like going for kickouts, and like it's going to be a brilliant competition around there. It's going to be so mobile, but also, yeah, both sides are very, very effective in the full forward line, and probably their weakest spots are maybe at full back. So it is set up to be a good game. I just think Kerry have the better players in all those positions, which is obvious enough, but. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. The other one is an all Connacht affair, lads. The hardest province to win, as we all know here on the podcast for a long, long time. I'm getting proven right here all over the place, lads. It's just a great place to be when you have Galway, Hammer and Donegal, lads. You have the two of you shut right up. I thought about the two of you during that match. I thought of the two of you sitting at home going, oh my god, Woolley was right.
I think you forget there's another three Ulster teams playing on Saturday.
Yeah, so we have good representation there, you know.
You do, I'll give you that. Right, John McManus, Roscommon fullback, said, I wouldn't have any fear of going out and playing Mayo, because I've played them at underage and we've beaten them. We feel we're capable of beating the top teams. And just kind of got you thinking of the confidence. This is a really such a young Roscommon team, and just that ingrained confidence from winning things underage that they don't care that it's Mayo. And like I remember that attitude. I had that attitude myself, whether it was right or wrong. I'm thinking we're going to beat Kildare in 1998 and we got hammered. Like I was thinking Kildare, let's just take on Buckley with a shoulder here, like, and I got clean. But that was that confidence that we've beaten all these teams, I'm not worried about them. And it takes maybe a year or two of getting beaten before you go, alright, this is a bit of a different ball game altogether. But like that's that natural confidence that a team coming up through winning underage has, and that no fear. And if you can kind of harness that along with some experienced players, like, it's a great mix.
And at the end of the day, listen, they are Connacht champions, you know, and they're Connacht champions for a reason, because they went unbeaten in their province, and they beat a Galway team who beat Mayo in the semi-final. So let's call a spade, Roscommon have quite often beat Mayo in underage football over the past couple of years. So why would they not be confident getting into this game? You know, a lot of these players have faced each other on numerous occasions. So certainly I'm glad to hear the Roscommon fullback coming out and saying things he got there, because it shows that there's not an arrogance but a confidence instilled in the team, you know, from the management all the way down, and it's filtering through now, and they've got an opportunity to go and represent their county in Croke Park and put on a show similar to what they've done in the Connacht final and prove their worth against what we would class as a top four team.
Yeah, well, this is the big test for Roscommon, because, like, I mean, the story coming out of the Connacht final was Galway's flop more than Roscommon's brilliance. Now, Roscommon are obviously excellent on the day, but I need to see a performance this Sunday from Roscommon before I start believing in the Roscommon team, because, you know, you're going on a lot of other results. Last year's championship, this year's league, they beat Leitrim. Was that Galway game an outlier on a bad day in Salt Hill with a strong wind when Galway were floating into the game thinking they had it won, or a Roscommon coming force? I think we'll get that answer on Sunday, Conor.
I think a part of that game, though, that will sort of bolster Roscommon is the fact that they were set up so well, and the players will have bought under the fact now that Kev McStay, he really knows what he's doing. They targeted Galway's weaknesses. They really snuffed them out. They played off the fact that they were complete underdogs, so they'll have complete confidence now in the manager. It's an unbelievable place to be. Like, whatever happens now, their season's a success. Like, you know, they've won the Connacht Championship. No one said they could do it. They've done it. They've gone in the quarter final. No pressure on them. They'll be underdogs again. Rightly or wrongly, they will be. Mayo cannot lose in a quarter final. Mayo lose in a quarter final, this is where people will start saying, yep, that's the end of the road now for this Mayo team, and this would be a disaster if Mayo lose. So what a crazy, like, it's such a great place for Roscommon. And I remember hearing, well, it's right or not, but I heard stories from half time of the Galway game, and just the vibe in the Roscommon dressing room, it was like, Jesus, lads, isn't this amazing? We're just destroying these boys. And it was just like, this is coming from the management, and it's like, let's just keep going out and enjoying ourselves here. And there seems to be a good positive atmosphere there, where the pressure's all Mayo, I think.
And that they are going into a game where there's no pressure. Mayo have, you know, they've stumbled through the qualifiers. They haven't been impressive by any shape or form. You know, Derry, Clare last weekend against a Cork team who were underperforming, albeit, you know, they did show up on that particular day. But, you know, their confidence won't be as high going into this game as what Roscommon's confidence would be. And from a personal point of view, wouldn't it be a great way for Kevin McStay to put the two fingers up at Gaisher, and if he's getting one over his own team?
Yeah, well, that's true. But are they good enough to beat Mayo, the lads, when it comes down to it? Like, I mean, I'm unsure if they are. Like, I mean, Mayo are tried and tested. Remember last year for the quarter final, they were not given a chance against Tyrone winning a provincial title, and they ended up beating a fancy Tyrone team. Mayo know Croke Park. I think they've been in more All Ireland quarter finals than anybody else. Something like that.
Yeah.
I think they're in six in a row. They don't
seven,
lose
seven, in,
seven
a row,
in a row. They don't lose. Have they lost all those? Have they won all those seven as well? Like, I mean, they're consistently at this level. So, like, I mean, Roscommon might be Connacht champions, but they're coming to Croke Park to play Mayo, who are a top three team. Like, I mean, it's a little weird dynamic that a team, I know you can't judge like this, so ye hammered the team that beat Mayo, but you're going to come into this game a little bit worried about playing Mayo. That's the reality of it, and that's the respect Mayo should have since they're on the road this long.
Exactly, and that is the thing with Mayo. Listen, we've seen it in the past couple of years that they have been knocked out of Connacht, but, you know, they've managed some way or another to find themselves back on the big stage, which is quarterfinal stage. And for Mayo, that's when the championship really starts. So, you know, they've got all the experience, all the guile, they have the quality players. You know, I was delighted to see Killian O'Connor score what he scored last week again, because I believe that he's a top class corner forward.
Sorry, I just don't think he's top three.
Yeah, well, I think he's in the top bracket of the forwards in the country. So to have that knowledge and know-how in terms of winning games in Croke Park, and, you know, that is probably what will set them apart from Roscommon this weekend. And from the offset this year, we have spoke about Mayo, regardless of how good or bad they've been in the league in different games throughout the start of the championship, that they will still manage to find themselves in the last four of the All-Ireland series, and I don't think that's going to change.
Yeah, right, lads, more stats from Stephen O'Mara, because, like, again, if you get a chance to go on to sportsshow.ie, have a look at Stephen's pieces, they're always great. So he did some analysis on Roscommon after the beat Galway, and he did some more man-on-man attacks. Man-on-man, we said Galway got a lot of them against Donegal, but Roscommon have, again, this seems to be the new style, is that you'll have your half-back line working back, but you'll be leaving three or four forwards up there, again, for that out ball. So Roscommon had 13 man-on-man attacks where they ended up in one-on-one situations. Six came off the back of winning long kickouts, while seven were manoeuvred from the back or midfield from open play. From those seven that were manoeuvred, obviously not from kickouts, from these seven, a killer pass took out the Galway middle third on three. Two came from carrying the ball at pace and off the shoulder and on counter-attacks, and two came directly from throw-ins. So we're looking at this, right? So they created 13 one-on-one situations, which you love to see. because Galway are obviously retreating back, no full-time sweeper. So they're cutting out all that middle third. Number one, some of these one-on-ones, how many of them? Six of them came off long kickouts. We know that's a no-brainer. We know how easy that is. There's manning up all over the field. You win your long kickout, you turn, you've got one-on-ones. Right, so move that ball on. Then from the seven that weren't from kickouts, a killer pass took out the Galway middle third on three. So there you are. You turn the ball over, right? The middle third is all congested. You kick that ball to your half forward line. You're cutting out these retreating players, and we're repeating ourselves from the first, analysis section. Roscommon are also copped onto this. Galway have copped onto it. Kerry have copped onto it. Dublin have kind of pretty much always kind of done it. Do you know? And you're in this. Mayo will do it. Like, I mean, all these teams are starting to cop on to this kind of tactic.
Yeah, and it is the most effective tactic in the game at the minute is getting the ball from defence to attack as fast and as quick as possible. And if you've got ball winners in half forward line that can control the ball first time, from the kick pass, then you know you have a strong opportunity of getting the ball further into the score zone with that type of play.
And so this is the way you look at it. So you have a two-man full forward line and you have a two-man half forward line, and everybody else defends when you don't have the ball, right? So you're working back. So if the other team are slow with their build up, you've got what? You've 11 players back behind the ball, right? So you'll have two midfielders and two half forwards all congesting around that 45 metre line and making it really difficult for you to get through. Grand. So when you have a two-man full forward line, what is it, Steve, you're always told? Movement, you know, crisscross runs, you know, all these things, block the other man. All these things that you've learned at underage level and all the way up through on a full forward line, the same principle applies to the two lads in the half forward line, because they're another point of attack. Absolutely. Now, so they have to be crisscrossing, they have to be getting out in front of their man, they have to be making crisscross runs, they have to be giving you the same movement, they have to be acting like full forwards but in the half forward line. So when they get on that ball, they're turning and they're giving it in, and then we're seeing more movement from the two lads inside. And like, I mean, in my head, if I had a football team, I would be doing shot clocks in training, I would be doing two half forwards, two full forwards, I would be coaching movement, I would be anyone that doesn't want to move and bloody put their body on the line to win those balls in the half forward line and move that ball fast. You're not playing on the team, and I think that's just beautiful tactics for a senior football team.
It's beautiful, and it's very easy to say.
Anybody in the Leash County
it's
board
very, it's very, very easy to say, but I can assure you
it's not as easy as that.
To do one of those things that you spoke about, it takes time.
Yeah.
And it takes nights upon nights upon nights on the training field to implement that. So, you know, any type of game plan and system takes time to I suppose get your players bought in, to get your players playing it effectively and to do it well. And you know, two on two, I love the idea. If I was playing in a forward line with three other forwards up with me, I would love that, because the space there should be unbelievable. If the ball's coming fast, Paul McGrain always had a saying, get it in the mixer, and he didn't care how he got it in there, it was high, low, anyway at all, but if he got any type of space around the half back full midfield area, the ball was coming in. So we instinctively knew, move. And once you've got players out the field, they got there prepared to kick the ball, instead of messing around with it and taking an extra bounce, which takes up time, an extra solo, which allows a defender to get back at you, you know, get the ball moving from defence to attack as quick as possible. It gives your team a greater opportunity to win games. And if you've got potent forwards inside, boys who can win the ball as well, then you've got a great chance to win any game.
Would him putting it in the mixer not encourage you nearly not to move, because you'd be like, Jesus, where's this ball going to go?
No, but the beauty about it was, you know, we always played very close to the goals, you know, and very close to the goalkeeper, so getting it in the mixer encouraged us to move it. But when we were moving, you're coming out towards the 21 and still in the score zone, you know, so we were still expecting to get the ball in the score zone where you could turn, kick the ball over the bar, turn, take the man on, which is gone from the game, or lay the ball off to the half forwards who are coming through on you.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt, and sure, like, you'll move, but you'll double back in around as well. It'll be interesting in midfield here again, lads. Enda Smith was obviously outstanding against Galway, and I remember on a show I did on Satanta, I did some analysis on Enda Smith playing. He was man of the match against Kerry down in Killarney or Tralee, one of the two in the league, and he was outstanding. He kicked 2 points off his right and one off his left going forward, right? But so I showed that, and I showed what he's brilliant at, and then I showed what he's not very good at, and that was competing in midfield, which his performance against Galway astounded me, because Enda Smith that day against Kerry didn't even entertain jumping with the Kerry midfield. He just didn't want any part of it. He wasn't competing. He didn't get hand on any kickouts. And I showed an example now about 10. I'm not, just showing one or two. It was a sustained kind of performance of not competing in midfield. And I went, it depends on what you want to go for with the likes of Enda Smith. Do you want a fella who can break forward and score 3 points off a midfielder, which he can totally do? Or do you want a fella who can actually guarantee you'll break even in midfield? And that's the question I was saying, that the Roscommon manager is going to have. But he showed that he can fetch against Galway, which I couldn't believe. Like, he can really, really fetch. And I don't know if he's worked on that or what he's kind of done. But again, this, just like Roscommon, he nearly mirrored the whole thing with Roscommon. He's coming up against Parsons, he's coming up against Aidan O'Shea, he's coming up against Seamus O'Shea. Has he got the help in that area to be able to compete with the big physical men, the old dogs for the hard road in that midfield area?
Suppose he was only, 20, 21 at that time?
Yeah, he's probably getting, growing up.
And you're right, he was amazing in there against Galway, and he was saying on the show that he took it nearly as an insult that we were just all talking about how great Galway were in there and that. But like, Tiger Rourke was very good the last day as well. Like, it was a dominant midfield performance from Roscommon. It wasn't just from Smith, and it was coming, like, they were winning kickouts from the half forward line. Their half backs were all very mobile. They were going to the wings. They were finding space wherever they could. And like, as amazingly as Aidan O'Shea is playing, he's probably in form of his life, well, since I've remembered the last few years anyway, he's playing some stuff. The other two lads, like, are they really on it at the minute? Like, there's a few question marks around that Mayo midfield just at the minute, like, and maybe that's an area where Roscommon could be thinking we can get at these boys.
Yeah, I still think maybe Tom Parsons is underestimated, but the amount of work that he goes through, if you actually look at his game very carefully, he does turn over a lot of players in possession, so he does, and he breaks 40, probably gets a couple of scores every match as well, does he? So
he goes forward.
I wouldn't undervalue or underestimate the worth that he is to that Mayo team at the minute.
Yeah, and I think the way Aidan O'Shea is playing, and he's fetching those kickouts. Like, I mean, he's playing centre forward, but he's helping out in that middle third, and he's opening up the centre forward position. And then, like we said, he's getting up to join the attack, and he's like the complete player at the moment. I don't think Enda Smith's at the level to compete with Aidan O'Shea. Maybe he won't be on him. You'd imagine maybe Enda Smith would go on Seamus O'Shea and try and run him around, or maybe even Tom Parsons and try and run around, because Enda Smith is so fast and he can break forward. And like, I mean, he didn't score too much, did he, Enda Smith, in the final? He didn't score at all. But like, I mean, he broke forward a good few times, and because it was such a messy day, he kind of lost control of it once or twice when a goal was on. But like, I mean, he can cause a lot of damage going forward, and whether natural midfielders like Seamus O'Shea and Tom Parsons will want to be following a fella who's only interested in going forward. Like, midfielders don't want to follow those type of fellas.
Yeah, and sometimes you've got to play to your strength. And Kevin McStay, might be looking at Enda Smith and saying, right, okay, we are going to find it difficult to break even in terms of the high ball that's coming out towards midfield, but when we have possession, we want you driving down the heart of the Mayo defence time after time, which Mayo will not want to track him back. But the problem is, if you're conceding primary possession to a team like Mayo, who are pretty good on the ball, they will move that ball around and they'll find spaces, pocket of spaces to get themselves into good areas and pinpoint scores as well. So, it's a conundrum for the Roscommon management. What way do they really want to play it? Do they want to start the game competing in midfield by jumping high? There's not too many players, let's be honest, that will outcatch Aidan O'Shea on current form and the way he has been playing over the last couple of games. So sometimes you have to hold your hands up and say, right, there's no point in us jumping and being out of the game, because if he catches and turns, he's away. So let him catch all he wants, but once he hits the deck, let's surround him and try to overturn him.
Yeah, it's actually interesting in this modern game, because these statistics packages that they get, this software where every opposition's kickouts, you'll get a package of every kickout. So you'll be able to, obviously, if you're a manager, decent manager, and you'll see trends in the kickouts, and you'll have so much study done in the kickouts. Like, do intercounty managers have to come up with new kickout strategies game on game, knowing that their game was recorded? The other fella has this package. He's not, I think some intercounty managers are amateur. I think some of them would spend hours looking over tapes and seeing patterns and seeing, like McGuinness, for example. McGuinness was pretty much a full time manager at the time. Like, a lot of the good managers. But like, something like kickouts, you can get whatever, the 15 kickouts the opposition took in the last game. geez, how many times do you have to look at that to see where their pattern is or where he likes to go or what he likes to do? This is where we're targeting. When he goes 10 to Smith, Shamian Parsons, you're leaving your man and or the goalie has a signal when he's going to Smith. You know, all these things you can see. I've never managed it in the county level. I wonder, do they have to say, right, they'll be on to that one, but we're going to you know what I mean? We're going to have to hit somebody else with it.
And Jim McGuinness's column on Tuesday, was it? He was just saying exactly that, how you watch 40, 50 hours of tape and then you start seeing these patterns emerging, then you know exactly where to target and you can tell your players exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't change it enough against Donegal, but I'm sure they're bound to do it now. Like, why would you go out? All you have to do is you still have your main man who you want to hit.
Yeah.
Just get them free in a different place.
Yeah, yeah. So it's maybe movement.
It's all about movement.
Maybe
all you've got to do is change the signal. You know, match on match and keep the players in the same position.
But if you have Aidan O'Shea, maybe you just have the Aidan O'Shea as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you've got a presence like that there, you want to be dropping 75% of your kickouts on top of him.
Yeah, I love, that's why I absolutely love the Kildare kickouts. Like, we've got Keane O'Neill, who is like one of the most modern coaches. He's gone so far that he's using occlusion goggles, but their kickouts, boom, feely, long. Like, you could actually write the tactics on the back of a postage stamp.
Mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, we don't need to complicate this, lads. Right, we'll come back here with predictions and talk about the two games on Saturday.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge the other night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Okay, predictions, lads. We started in two quarterfinals and we're not going to talk anyway. We'll just give predictions of what we think the results will be, and then we'll talk about the two games Saturday. So Roscommon, Mayo, lads. Roscommon are 3-1, Mayo are 4-11, and Mayo are -3 in the handicap. Personally, I would be going with Mayo -3 in the handicap. Let's hear your thoughts.
8-1 for a draw.
8-1 for the draw. You love a draw.
One of these weeks, you know, there is one that's
going to
come.
Well, one time in eight, he's a good chance of getting
it. I'm not going to go for the draw, by the way. I know I've been talking up Roscommon a lot and trying to talk down Mayo a bit, but I'm going for Mayo. I don't know -3, though. I don't know if I trust that. I think it'll be tight. I do think Roscommon can get at that fullback line as well. I think Mayo will dominate midfield as much as I've been trying to give a sort of other side of it, but
you have a graw for Roscommon now because you feel guilty about writing them off.
Exactly.
I know exactly. I know.
So a draw. Nah, I'm going to go with Mayo, but not -3.
Okay, Stevie.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Mayo. Just about.
For Mayo for the win. Well, you're not going out on a limb with that.
No, just for the win, and simply because you know I believe Roscommon at the minute are a better team than Cork, and Cork run Mayo very close. Roscommon are a better team than Derry. You know, and
you can't judge like that.
Well, that's the way I am judging them. I'm judging on past form, and that's just the way it is. And Roscommon have confidence coming into this game. Mayo, you know, are still a wee bit unsure. Yes, they've got the experience in Croke Park, but I still believe that'll be enough to see them through this particular game.
Okay, great stuff. Kerry, Galway, lads. Kerry are 2-9. They're even stronger favourites than Mayo are against Roscommon, and Galway are 4-1 outsiders. Kerry -5 in the handicap. This is a really difficult one. I think Kerry are going to win this game. What to do on the handicap, I'm not really too sure. Maybe just stay away.
I've tipped Kerry to win the All-Ireland this year and I'm sticking by them. I think Eamon Fitzmaurice now knows, you know, when he comes up against the Dublins, how to beat them based on his league final performance as well. His team are you know, frighteningly went through Munster at ease, and I can see the handicap coming in here, and I do believe it's going to be a shootout. Both, there's going to be a high scoring game, but I think Kerry's forwards, the full forward line, is just too dangerous, and the spread of scores that they have, you know, how ruthless and clinical were they in the first 5 minutes of the Munster final against Cork. They were just, everything that they hit that day was sublime, and I think they'll carry on in that form.
Yeah, Colin,
what odds for a draw?
8-1 usually the draw. Hear this fella.
I actually think it's 12-1 because I did check. I think
no time wasters, we should say, is some sort of
I'm going to contact the bookmaker and ask what minus 8 odds are. That's what that's
you think. Kerry will win it easy.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, it will be a high scoring one. Like I said, I'm staying away from the handicap. I don't know whether I couldn't possibly know who to come down on in that one. Armagh, Kildare, Stevie, finally we're nearly an hour in and you're finally getting your space. You can finally use your notes on your own county here that you have highlighted here.
That man was not drunk.
you've got the supporters off your chest now. What do you want to get off your chest against Armagh, because they are 9-4 outsiders? So you got over 2-1 for Armagh to win this one, which I think is a bit too generous for Armagh to beat Kildare over 2-1.
They've no chance.
You're doing the old Martin McHugh.
No, for me this game is potentially going to be another shootout.
Yeah.
I've listened to the arguments for Kildare to win this game, and I've listened to the arguments for Armagh to stay in the game over the last week or so since the draw was made. I'm looking at both teams, and I said it last week that I hope Kevin Feely got his black card overturned, and I'm delighted that he has, because I want the Armagh midfield to be tested. I want to see exactly where they're at, because they have been impressive in the last couple of games.
How good is Grimley, Stevie? He's around last year and this year. He's really making a name for himself.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player. I had him at under-21 level, you know, and he's got a brilliant attitude. He's got great athleticism. He's a natural footballer, so he is probably more suited to playing in the forward line. But I'll tell you what he has got. He's got a serious leap and an ability to catch ball as well. So,
he'll play on Feely then, will he?
I would imagine that he might be the player on Feely. And that's why I want to see where they're exactly at. They're coming up against Kevin Feely, who has been outstanding all throughout the course of the year. So let's put them up against the best players. And that's the reason behind that. I said it last week and I stand by that. But I'm looking at both teams and I'm saying they're both athletic. They're both very strong. Yeah. They'll use the space of Croke Park effectively well. They'll go to win the game. They'll both play attacking football. For me, it's very hard to call. I don't think there's going to be very much between the teams, but I just think Armagh's forward line has more match winners in it. And I spoke and I've raved about the Armagh forward line often enough this year, and I think that this potentially could be the game for them to show that they are quality players up there. And I just believe, while Kildare have quality players throughout their squad as well, I just think Armagh's forward line are more dangerous and more capable of scoring goals.
Yeah, see, I don't know if the Armagh forward line is more dangerous, but we'll talk about the Armagh forward line then. McPartland was outstanding the last day, but he's been around a while again. Was that just a great game of his, or are we talking about?
He was outstanding actually against Westmeath as well. He's one of the very few players who kicked a couple of sublime points against Westmeath and showed well. He's a very strong player. Brilliant ball winner. He's a player that has won an All-Ireland minor title playing corner forward as well. So he's been in
Why
around.
Why has he not come on the scene before? You know,
he's been on the squad for quite a while.
I've seen his name loads of times, but I've never seen him.
Well, it's quite simple. You know, he's always been on the outskirts of the team, but like, he has now taken the place of Stephen Campbell.
Yeah,
you know,
that's an interesting one.
Stephen has struggled to start.
He's done very well coming on, Stephen, though.
Yeah, he has done very well coming on, and you know, I would still prefer to see Stephen Campbell starting, particularly this weekend, because you know, when you get to Croke Park, you want scorers coming on. I know Kieran wants players coming into the game and making an impact as well, but Stephen Campbell has the ability to if he starts this game this weekend, to strike 5-6 points over the bar, and you know, he will strike fear in the Kildare defence as well, because the thing with Stephen Campbell is you can play him inside and you can play him in the half forward line, and he's got a great ability to run from deep. And when Armagh last went on their run to the quarterfinals in 2014, he was playing as a wing half forward, coming from deep and kicking 3-4 points a game back then. So you know, you have to admire what Gavin McParnell has done. He's come into the team, he's kept out a seriously good player in Stephen Campbell from his position, but he's stood up to the challenge and he's made a count as well.
Here's a question for you. Is Michael Shields has been playing in the forwards the last few games, because he's been marking
Mark Shields.
He's been marking Kylie from
I think
Tipperary,
actually,
and he's also marked from down
Mooney,
wing back Caelan Mooney.
Yeah.
So Kildare don't have that danger in their half back line. Like, I mean, so does Campbell come in for Shields then, and Shields go back into the defence? I think, is Shields wasted there if he doesn't have that job of marking
the
dangerous halfback?
I think what we might see there is that Kieran might opt to keep Shields at back. The thing with Mark Shields is he's a very versatile player, and he's got He's got blistering pace as well, and he's played the role effectively. I think you're at the Tipperary game. You know, Kiley, as we know, is a driving force in the Tipperary team, and I think it was a very smart move by Kieran McGeaney to put, you know, a marker on him. But a player who has pace and can put him on the back foot as well. But for this game this weekend, you know, Kieran might up for maybe an Oisin O'Neill at centre half forward, or a Stephen Campbell at centre half forward. Players with more of a scoring threat to absolutely go at Kildare. Armagh have got nothing to lose in this game. You know, the pressure is on Kildare because they are going into the game as favourites. And for me, you know, it's Armagh are now in bonus territory. So, you know, they've got nothing to lose. Throw off the shackles and go and express themselves as players and see what happens. But listen, the Armagh own county, I fancy their chances, but it's really, really tough to call, and I think it's going to be an exciting game.
Really exciting game, lads, because again, we can throw Kildare and Armagh into the same boat as Mayo, Roscommon, Kerry, Galway. No full-time sweepers. They might leave a defender back and not follow his man, but they won't be bringing any forwards back to play as a full-time sweeper. Move the ball fast through the foot. I would pull you up on Armagh having a stronger forward line than Kildare, because Kildare have Daniel Flynn, who's unbelievable, Paddy Brophy, who's unbelievable, Niall Kelly, who's unbelievable, and Cottle McNally, who's
Kildare have five forwards to score against Dublin, you know, so they are a threat.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind that they're a threat, but I still think the likes of James Morgan, who's a good man marker, Paul Hughes, another good man marker, Forker, Shields, players like that there can keep these boys limited. Listen, I'll go back to the point I made earlier on. But quality forwards, you're only ever going to be able to limit the damage that they can do. If Kildare get good quality ball, which I would expect that they will do in Croke Park, then they will cause a certain amount of trouble to the Armagh defence. Vice versa, the same with the Armagh attack. I just see this as more goals in the Armagh attack than what I see in Kildare.
7 o'clock on a Saturday night, a bit of an odd time to have a match. Like, I mean, that might mess with players' preparation. Like, it's very rare at intercounty level you have to wait until 7 o'clock on a Saturday night for a match in Croke Park.
That's
like,
what happened at Donegal. That's the only reason.
No, listen, I don't think the players will look into that at all. At the end of the day, you know, their job is to go out and perform. And, you know, if I'm sitting in that dressing room with an opportunity to run out in Croke Park and play at 7 o'clock, I don't care. I'd play at midnight in Croke Park if the opportunity was there for me, you know. So
for nervous players, though, it's a long day of nerves.
It's a long day.
Well, no, your body clock should be okay on the eating. The say 2 o'clock game, well, you always find you might.
I'm gonna go back to this here. A lot of players train at 7:30, 7 in the evening, okay, and peak in training sessions, perform exceptionally well in training sessions, sometimes can't carry it into games, and their eating pattern will be fine because of that there. So I think actually sometimes a player actually comes alive at that time of the evening, because that's the time that they actually spend most of their training.
How would you time your food then? Like, I mean, if you're a match, because I know for training I'll have my breakfast, I'll have my dinner at a good dinner when I was playing with Leash, so I'd have a Carvery or something, but I wouldn't eat again before training, because I know if I have something after work at 5:30, it's too close.
What time's your Carvery at?
1 o'clock maybe.
And that's the last you'll eat until
that's the last time. Now before training, obviously if you have a championship match at 7, you have to have it absolutely set. So what are your times then? So like 9 o'clock, 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock?
I think the last time that these guys will probably eat will be about 5:30, and then snack on maybe a bit of fruit or whatever.
But would it be a big meal at half? It'd be a big meal at 4:30.
It'll be chicken, pasta, you know, beans, whatever. Every player's different, you know. For instance, before a match, I couldn't eat. I absolutely could not eat. I had ambrosia rice before games because I couldn't eat anything else, you know. And it was the nervous tension that was building up inside me, you know. And
ambrosia rice.
That's exactly what it was. And Ronan Clark was the same, you know. He was a player that...
You and Ronan Clark sitting eating ambrosia rice.
But he was a player, believe it or not, before nearly every match that we played, he was vomiting. And at half time of games, he was getting sick.
Really?
And, you know...
This is the thing. You really have to force that food into you. And I remember sitting with Leash, and before a game at 2 o'clock you might have a big kind of thing at 11 of pasta. So number one, your nerves are jumping all over the place. When you're nervous, you're not naturally hungry. You're also not in the mood to eat a meal at 11 o'clock. It's horrible. You're forcing that food into you.
And that's exactly why I couldn't eat a big feed before a game. I ate what I could eat. I had ambrosia rice. Maybe on the coach ride into the pitch where we were playing, I would have an apple or an orange or something like that there. But I was never hungry going into a game. But that worked for me. Every player is different, you know. So there will be players going into the game on 7 o'clock, you know, maybe overly concerned about what time did he eat at them and how did he get it right. But what I'd be saying to those players is, what time do you train? Do most of your training sessions at 7:30, 7:30. Stick to your routine then. Stick to exactly what you always do.
But your routine is working till 5:30 or 5:00, yeah, you know, so that's shit.
Yeah, but they're going to, they're still going to be busy throughout the course of that day because they're going to meet early enough that day, and all they have to do is get their timings right.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Some of these things, like, I mean, this is the funny thing about this is whatever team will lose, they'll say, well, we did this wrong. They'll have their debrief meeting and players go, well, we ate too late anyways. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Our warm up one.
Right. What were we thinking?
A whole load of tubs of ambrosia rice. Like, listen, we've done loads on that.
I'm going to see that all over Sports Show all week, aren't I?
I can see Conan is thinking of the Photoshop
already. Thinking, yeah.
Did you see
I'm going to have to stop giving you ammunition.
Did you see his face? I actually glanced at him when you said the ambrosia rice and he just went into a daydream.
He was licking his lips. I think he was thinking of it.
He was thinking about the Photoshop.
All right, lads. We'll talk,
I'm looking to get an old sponsor gig here.
Down in Monaghan, lads, this is a little bit like Roscommon and Mayo, as in Down have beaten Monaghan, obviously, and that was a great game and a great performance by Down. Funnily enough, Down should be coming into this game with more confidence than they will be. Monaghan lost badly against them, got two handy draws against two teams in Leinster. Well, they actually struggled over Carlow. Carlow had a brilliant performance. Wexford kind of rolled over for them. But this is another difficult one. You fancy Monaghan. Monaghan are strong favourites at 4-11. You'll get Down at 3-1. Getting Down at 3-1 when only 4 weeks ago they beat Monaghan, it's a weird one. When Monaghan haven't impressed massively on their route back to here, yeah, either.
It's big odds simply based on the fact that it's quite difficult in any one season to beat the same team twice. And that's why. But for me, Monaghan haven't played particularly well in the back door. Yes, the blue Wexford aside, but that was the only game where they really let loose. You know, against Carlow set up very defensively and made life difficult for Monaghan, but Monaghan still struggled to get through that game. They're struggling to get their massive players, you know, in two games and performing to the levels that they're capable of. The likes of Conor McManus, boys they got there, you know, who you want to be getting on the ball and dictating games. You know, he has come good at certain moments in games, but he hasn't been himself throughout the course of this championship campaign. So, you know, Kieran Cuse has probably been Monaghan's outstanding player throughout the course of the championship, and he's playing from midfield, but sometimes he drops in. What's the best role to play Kieran Cuse in, you know? So it's another, you know, decision for Malachy O'Rourke to make, you know. But
the two Hugheses were at midfield the last day against Carlow. But, like, I mean, Darren Hughes said to you on the podcast you did that Down kind of surprised them a little bit in midfield. They got their tactics right, so it's all, like, you know, what worked for Down that day obviously isn't going to work again. Yeah. Listed, like what Stevie said, beating as underdogs, beating a favourite once is great. Beating them twice doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. It's shit for Down. That happens to them, you know. Not like it happens to them some amount of times. You have to play a team twice again. Like, and it's sometimes it doesn't seem fair, but another thing that's going to sort of catch them out a little bit is that Monaghan will be so up for it now because of how aggressive Down were. Like, not only did they have, like, the memory of losing to them, but they have that Down in their faces shouting at them, hitting them off the ball.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
And I don't think Drew Wiley's going to be too happy about maybe, like, the covers that Conor Harrison got afterwards. Like, you can't. Is Drew Wiley going to get roasted twice? I don't
know. Well, you have to ask the question, too. Drew Wiley was involved in the car crash that morning, and regardless of whether it was serious or not, it's going to leave a player shaken, you know, and it obviously affected his performance. But Conor Harrison on that particular evening was exceptionally good, and some of the points he kicked were fantastic. He needs to back up that performance, though. He's coming up against a seasoned campaigner in terms of Drew Wiley at fullback. Drew Wiley's going to be a different animal coming into this game. So is Conor Harrison going to be able to withstand the pressure that's going to be put on him this week? Croke Park's the place for him to do it, you know. So it's up, but for me, a lot of Down players have to stand up now. Yes, they were disappointing in the Ulster final against their own. So this is an opportunity to say, you know, we beat Down, but we beat Monaghan the last year because we deserve to beat them, and we'll prove that we can beat them again. And this is the place to beat them in Croke Park, with an opportunity to go to an All-Ireland quarter final. Let's back up what we've already done this year. But as I say, listen, the hunger, the bite, the attitude should be there with Manning, and that's why it's going to be extremely difficult for Down to get one over them again.
Yeah, Down are going to have to mix it up a little bit. Like, I mean, what worked for them against Manning the last time, they're going to have to surprise them all over again. You know, whatever they're going to come up with. Maybe Kevin McKernan plays, you know, a centre half forward and holds the half forward line or something. Like, I mean, Ryan Johnson got the freedom of the park the last day. Like, I mean, he's going to be tagged this time because he caused so much damage of just filtering that ball on and keeping Down. Like, maybe a new role for him. You know, that kind of, because he is a versatile type player. But Down need to mix it up. There's no doubt. What worked for them the last day, they can't be depending on that working again.
They certainly need to mix it up, and they have players to mix it up. You know, I'm looking at both teams in front of me, and I'm still saying that Down have dangerous forwards. You know, if you give them any type of ball at all and give them the space of Croke Park, if they really believe in themselves, and we always speak about the confidence and arrogance of Down the further they go in any championship campaign, these guys believe in themselves enough, they will cause a serious threat to Monaghan. And I like the look of Ryan Johnson when he's on the ball. He's an accomplished player. He's won a lot at club level, and you know, this is the stage where he needs to be performing at as well. Kevin McKernan, season player for them as well. Caelan Mooney, this is the stage where Caelan Mooney needs to step up and show his worth and prove his worth, because he is a player who's played professional sport, you know. And
I'd change his position as well. Possibly. He's going to be tagged too, you know what I mean. He's a defender's going to be played on him like Geezer did. Caelan Mooney then, play Caelan Mooney midfield maybe. You know, there has to be, so Malachy, you know, O'Rourke has to be thinking this, you know, if he thinks, if Down go out with this same, like these, all these big players in the same positions, they're wasting their time.
There has got to be, there has to be that element of surprise. There's no doubt. And Caelan Mooney has played for Down in midfield.
Yeah.
And he's been very dangerous playing for Down in midfield with his blistering pace. When you imagine a player with his pace going down the heart of an opponent's defence, it's got to cause, turmoil.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Lads, we forgot to give predictions in the Armagh-Kildare game. We'll give predictions in both of these. So you've got Armagh 9-4 and you've Kildare 1-2. So Kildare strong favourites, Kildare -2 in the handicap. Stevie won't be too happy with this. If I'm going to be a betting man, I'd go Kildare -2. I think Kildare will win this game by exactly 3 points in a high scoring, really entertaining game.
Okay, I'm going to go with Armagh. Not just because they're Mayon County, but because I believe there's more goal poachers in the forward line, and I'm going to stick with Armagh, and goals will be the difference.
Cannon,
I think I'm going to go with Armagh as well. I didn't think I was going to go with Kildare, but Stevie's convinced me.
When has he done? He's done this to us many a time, though, Cannon. You have to remember this. Fight against what he's saying. Fight against it.
No, restraint. He's still thinking of the Ambrosia race.
honestly, we're talking about the Kildare forward line, but I watched Conor Sweeney, and I know Michael Quinlevin was just coming back from injury, but I watched those boys being so quiet inside as well against Armagh. I think they were held to like 8 possessions each, which isn't a lot for your 2 main forwards in a team at home in a championship match. Like, the defence was super. The dynamic between Murnan, between McParland and Jamie Clark was brilliant, and how they sort of rotated and they could come out into midfield if they wanted. I just think Kieran McGeaney is due one, to start it anyway, like, just to say, here I am now, like, here's my big skill.
It would be great.
Can I say something on that as well about Kieran? You know, when Kildare went on their main run, and this probably has been overlooked as well, went to an All-Ireland semi-final and possibly were very unlucky not to go to the final in 2010. That was Kieran's third year in charge when they really give the big push, and this is now his third year with Armagh. And it could be, you know, certain managers have it at a stage that getting teams peaking at a certain time, and maybe this could be the year where Armagh give it a good push. Listen, they're not good enough to ultimately go and win an All-Ireland or anything, but you know, to give the belief in the county and give the championship campaign a good push and reach the quarterfinals, I think it would be a serious stepping stone.
Armagh, you're going for Armagh.
And it's just as if it's a tougher game, it's a tougher route. I mean, you can piss around Leinster, we all know that, like, so it's really tough to know where Kildare are at.
Kildare hammered Meath, who almost beat Donegal. Listen, we can play that game all day. Right, Down and Monaghan here, lads. Down are 3-1, Monaghan are 4-11, Monaghan are -4 in the handicap. Fancy Monaghan strongly, but again, I don't know what to make of that handicap. I'll just go for Monaghan straight away.
Here's one to really throw teams off. This one could be a draw, you know, and really affect the timing of the Kildare Armagh game then. But I don't think it will be. I think Monaghan will squeeze through just about, but Down will make life really difficult. You know, Down have it in their armour to go and beat Monaghan. It's a very tough one to call, but I just think the hurt and pain that Monaghan felt in Armagh from before 5 weeks ago, the heart of, the hands of Down will come back to haunt Down.
Cannon,
Monaghan.
Monaghan as well.
Yep.
So that's it. Right, listen, I'd say this podcast could be nearly an hour and a half at this stage. We want to give some bit of respect to all four games, which we're all looking forward to. And we'll be back on Monday with probably a long podcast then as well. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.